The podcast with everything that is paranormal. It is the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your sassy host, Joe Shortridge. And your ghostly girl, Shoddy. What's up, Joe?
You know, I have to say something about this song.
What's that?
Devil, White Devil.
Yeah.
Is when it starts out and Dana does that badass bass where she just goes down the neck of the bass with blah.
You like that? Blah, 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 blah. Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So we were in the city of real music.
Yes. It was amazing.
New Orleans.
Joe and I hit up the NOLA for a long weekend with some friends of ours who a band, you hear their music.
Yeah.
And had a fabulous time in old New Orleans.
Ah, so good to be back.
I know. It was amazing. What a great, I mean, like, what can you say about one of the most haunted cities in America, right? Like, it's so great. And we want to give a special shout out to our cousins, Kim and Laura, for hosting us and taking me out to dinner for my 50th birthday.
Yeah.
222 was my birthday, and I'm 50, and I'm not happy about it. But no, we went to this amazing restaurant called Muriel's, and it's so interesting because this restaurant is known to be haunted, extremely haunted. There was a gentleman back in, what, the late 1800s? Mm-hmm. Who had inherited the house from his father or mother who had passed away. And he was a very young owner of this building. So it was most likely a house. Because they were wealthy, you know, you would have like several floors, right? Mm-hmm. You would have the ground floor and the top floor. It's now a restaurant, but at the time it would have been, I would consider it a mansion.
Oh, right? Definitely.
A French Quarter mansion. And he don't understand particularly why he committed suicide. Do you remember this, Joe?
I think it was because him losing the house.
Oh, yeah. So he jumped off the balcony. Mm-hmm. Was that the story?
Yeah.
So he's reported to haunt this restaurant. Now, when you go in the restaurant, it just, I don't know. I feel this in a lot of the restaurants in New Orleans. You just feel like there's people watching and there's nobody there, right?
Extremely haunted.
Yeah. And it's very, very close to the river. And at night, the fog rolls in off the river, and it's so eerie because you can literally see it coming down, and then all the streets and alleyways get really foggy, and it's super scary. But we went upstairs. Upstairs they have a special place. They have a table that's set every single night in honor of the ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And they put a glass of wine there and an empty plate and a candle burning. And they have done this every night for years.
Yeah.
For years, probably.
Like hundreds.
100 years, whatever. And so upstairs, they have like kind of like a lounge area, and it's all like deep, dark red velvet. It's like a vampire lounge.
It is.
The only way I can describe it. Gold mirrors and big sarcophaguses, and there's a seance room. And they've had, you know, multiple people have had seances in there. Now, when we went in there, there was some people in there, but they weren't doing a seance. Mm-hmm. They were just, you know, hanging out in that room, which is kind of creepy. But I thought the room outside of that, the bigger room, the space we were in, it has like lounge chairs.
Yeah, it's got a big round chair in the middle.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
And the wall,
like velvet tufted
chairs.
Yeah,
the red was the wall was red velvet, as if it was like a couch or something, but it was a whole wall.
It was neat.
Yeah.
But
I felt so comfortable in that room.
I felt a little more spooky in that room than I did in the seance room.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, I mean, if you guys get down there, go to Muriel's. It's super expensive. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. It is very, very high priced. I had a salad and some soup because I was just like, I said, I want to save room for dessert. It's just because I didn't want my cousins to have to pay $60 for a meal.
Oh, yeah.
For me.
It was ridiculous.
And I did get a free birthday dessert.
There you go. I did. It's worth it.
Joe and I split this beautiful chocolate flourless cake. So it was almost like a fudge, right?
Yeah.
And then they gave me some ice cream with a candle for my birthday. So, but you know, that restaurant, that whole area is just so, you know, this is what is so interesting about New Orleans that you don't get anywhere else. It's like the buildings are all like clapboard and you're walking by and it doesn't, you know, look that fancy and everything's got this gritty grime to it.
Uh-huh.
But like if you peek back in, there's courtyards behind their houses, mm-hmm. and you have to kind of peek through like their little wooden fences or little alleyways and stuff. And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder what those houses look like inside.
The thing is, yeah, it's like you said, the outside looks so dirty and run down, but the inside of the buildings are so
amazing.
And the courtyards, the reason why they have the buildings like that is, back when they were built, the streets were dirty and smell. They had sewage and all that.
Okay.
So they didn't live in the front of the house. They lived in the back of the house by the courtyard.
Okay, with a lot of flowers and
yeah.
that. And yeah, so we went to this restaurant, and I couldn't tell you the name of it, but it was in one of those courtyards, that place that we
yeah,
went
I don't
and we had lunch. And it was so neat because there were so many flowers. And, you know, we're coming out of the winter, right?
Yeah.
It was snowing when we left. And then we get there and we're sitting with, you know, in t-shirts in the 80 degree weather on this courtyard with these beautiful, like, magnolia tree was in there and string lights up high and the full bar. And, you know, it just was like, what did I have? Oh, I had a BLT. And it was on a crispy croissant. And it was so good. I could not get enough of it. It was like thick bacon. I know it's not paranormal, guys. Just bear with me. But the bacon was so good. That's the thing, too, about New Orleans. All the food is just like delish.
Uh-huh.
Homemade, scratch made. You know, you're not getting like some chicky nuggies from Applebee's when you go there. But
had the fanciest McDonald's I've ever seen in the Garden District.
Yeah.
But we stayed in a house on Frenchman Street, and it was right next to Dat Dogs.
Yeah, this hot dog stand.
But
it was like a building, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the house we stayed in, once again, the outside didn't look that great,
mm-hmm.
but the inside was unbelievable.
It was beautiful.
It was set up still the way it was back in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Furniture and everything was just like the 30s. And I got some vibes. I mean,
yeah, for I know sure.
I went over some of the evidence that from the little investigation I did, and I think I heard stuff like EVPs and stuff, but the creep vibe in that place was pretty high too.
Yeah, yeah. And the downstairs and the upstairs, totally different vibe.
Think so?
Yeah. Definitely. I was kind of creeped out because, like, you know, there was three bedrooms upstairs and one bedroom downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the middle bedroom. So our Dana and James had the front bedroom, which had the, like, patio you could walk out on. And then Joe had the back one and I had the one in the middle. And, like, I'm like, the ghosts are going to get me in here. I'm in somebody's bedroom. You know, it's an Airbnb. It's fine. But, no, I felt really comfortable and... but I didn't like to be downstairs by myself.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I just was like creepy to me. And I did put the K2 out and Joe put his K2 out too. And I got a couple blips, but I was like, I'm not sure because there was like Wi-Fi down there. So,
well, I checked that though, because I put my K2 right by the Wi-Fi mm-hmm. and there was a security system.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That was a wireless security system. So mm-hmm. I kind of checked that, but it didn't go off when it was close to that, but in the parlor, it kept going off.
Yeah, it was strange in the parlor. I'm thinking like that probably was like a funeral. They had funeral in there. Somebody died near or was mm-hmm. laid out in there because I could just feel it. It was weird.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it because that's what they used to do.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm right on this, but thinking back when the house was being used, like in the 30s and that, they didn't have any funeral parties in that area.
Right.
So they used the home. And it was set up like a house that they had funerals in. You know what I mean? Not really a funeral parlor, but it was set up like that.
But I liked the fact that the kitchen was modern, the bathrooms were all modern. So they put some money into this house. It had the old and the new.
Yeah.
Perfectly combined, right?
Now, I just found out some weird, talking to you before the show, we kind of collaborated on something that I thought the back bedroom, when we got there, obviously the bed was made and the sheets weren't wrinkled or nothing. And then 2 days later, I went in there and the bed, the sheets were all, like the bedding, was all
jumbled up.
And I thought you were in there at one time.
Well, I did. I tried to take a nap back there and I just, the bed was not comfortable. So I got up and smoothed out the comforter and re-fluffed the pillows and, you know, because I'm type A and I have to do that. But yeah, it was totally.
It looked like someone just slept in there and pulled the sheets and all that off the bed and everything. And I thought you did it.
No.
And you thought I did it. And I'm like, no,
I don't know.
That's the weirdness. And then
could have been a ghost.
The back door was open.
Oh, it scared me so bad. We came back from dinner and the back door was wide open.
But I think I did that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Because when I did my video, I walked in the house and kept walking. And I think I left the back door open. So who knows? Maybe the homeless guy that was on the porch came in and slept in that bed. I don't know.
You never know.
Never know.
You just don't know. Yeah, I was scared then. I was just like, so I had to check under the, I checked under my bed when I went upstairs because I was like, I got to check under the bed. I checked the closet twice and then I shut it and then I shut and locked the door. But it was just, you know, it's great because it's so nice to stay somewhere that feels historic.
Oh, yeah.
Versus just a hotel.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird.
But I don't get me wrong. I love staying in a hotel.
Oh, yeah.
I like free soaps and stuff, you know.
But it was weird because we spent most of the time up in Dana and James' bedroom because it had the balcony.
Oh, my gosh. It was so cool. It was so warm.
Yeah.
And, great people watching. Spooky vibes. But as Joe and I, you know, walked the city, and this is the thing. There was nobody there. When we got there was nobody in the city. We got there on Thursday. And normally when you go to New Orleans, there's people walking up and down the sidewalks everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're walking around the town and there's like hardly anybody.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful because you could walk down, and it's so rare for New Orleans, you could walk down a street and nobody was on the street but you. And, you know, you could take your time and not worry about tripping over the sidewalk and getting run over by some homeless person who's trying to walk. And so, you know, it was great. Joe and I walked the city. And we loved it. And it was so great. But the one place that we got by and, you know, we're just fascinated by is the LaLaurie Mansion.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the... Now, I've heard that it's supposed to be the most haunted place in New Orleans, but I've also heard that about the monastery or the convent.
Yeah, and also the Sultan's Palace, which I think we walked by, but we didn't realize we were walking by it. That's another, we'll do a show on that one too, kids. But, you know, walking by it, it just looks like every other building that's in New Orleans. It's three stories. Small fourth. I don't know if there's a basement or not in there. I don't know if there's many basements in New Orleans because of the water table. But what did you think, Joe? Like, didn't you get just creeped out?
I wanted to go inside.
I know. So if you guys don't know, and I'm sure you guys do if you watch any ghost shows or American Horror Story, the LaLaurie Mansion is this very, very famous giant mansion. It's down in the French quarters and it has such a dark history to it because of Delphine LaLaurie, who was the owner. Her and her husband came from France and purchased the mansion, and they were extremely wealthy at that time, And just some of the horrific things that they have done in there has caused great hauntings to happen. And famously, Nicolas Cage had owned the house, but mm-hmm. in the 2008 real estate dive that, you know, happened, he filed bankruptcy and lost all his New Orleans holdings, including the LaLaurie Mansion. Now,
what about his pyramid?
I don't know.
Okay.
Describe it for people because it's hideous.
Okay, so New Orleans is famous for these cemeteries. And I believe it's New Orleans Cemetery number one.
St. Louis number one.
Yeah, St. Mm-hmm. Louis number one. You go in there and there's just old, beautiful family plots. And Nicolas Cage bought up four of them. Somehow, I think he cleared them out or moved them. And now he has his own, it's not even a mausoleum or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a pyramid.
It's a pyramid.
He has a pyramid that he's going to be buried in. And it doesn't match anything. And it's so out of place.
It's just this big white stone pyramid that's like, what would you say, like 4 foot by 5 foot or something?
Yeah, something like that. It's
5 by 5.
But
it's like this solid concrete nothingness. It's so hideous and just is a disservice to all the other graves that are there.
But anyhow, he bought this house and apparently he lost it. And I wish I would know how much he lost it for, because I would have went and bought it, you know?
Sure. It's currently owned by some Texas millionaire, billionaire or something that. And an energy trader. And that person uses mansion as a weekend home to entertain clients and friends.
So it is still a home?
It's still a home. Okay. Can you believe that?
I didn't know if they turned into a hotel or something, but
I would love to know who this Texas energy person is, because I might know them since I'm in the energy, I'm in the fuel business from a day job, and like to get invited to that.
Get invited house. And we can do a paranormal investigation inside the
can
house.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
I am imagining it.
I don't know. That's such dark history. I would be scared. I mean, yeah. Just the stuff that went on
in that house.
Oh, my God, these poor souls.
Yeah, so let's basically just talk about Delphine.
Okay.
Because her husband really, I don't know if he plays a role in this, because they never mention his husband or her husband.
Right. I think he's probably one of those husbands that just like turned his eye. He was busy doing his things, and just whatever she wants.
Because she was very well known and respected in the city. She was wealthy. She was a wealthy slave owner. And in outer appearance, she treated her slaves really good. So that she treated, other people really good, but behind closed doors is a completely different story. She was a torturess of her slaves and just was a bad person. Unbelievable things.
Yeah, the things that she would do to these poor.
But so anyhow, she was married three times. Mm-hmm. So why don't we step back and actually mention about her marriages?
Okay. So she was actually married three times. Can you relay this? On June 11th in 1800, at 13, now she's 13 years old and gets married to Don Ramon Lopez y Angulo, a caballero of the Royal de la Royal de Carlos, a high-ranking Spanish officer at the St. Louis Cathedral in New Orleans. So she did get married in New Orleans at 13.
At the cathedral.
I was still playing Barbies when I was 13. But don't tell anybody.
The cathedral is still there downtown. It's the longest.
Wow.
It's the oldest running church in the United States.
Louisiana is still a Spanish territory.
Okay.
Which is so interesting. And in 1760, after France was defeated in the Seven Years' War, so it's still, I don't even think it's like part of the United States yet.
No.
Right?
No, this is so crazy. It's just a territory.
Okay. So in 1804, after the American acquisition of what was then the French territory, Don Ramon had been appointed to the position of general counsel for Spain in the territory of New Orleans. So, he's high ranking. They probably have money. So Delphine gets pregnant. So she's a 13 or 14 year old pregnant girl. Uh-huh. No, she's, let's see. Oh, she's about 17 by this time.
Okay.
And her husband died in Havana. So he was en route to Madrid and ended up dying in Havana. A few days after his death, she gave birth to her daughter, Marie Borja Delphine Lopez y Anguillero de la Candelaria. They nicknamed her Burquita, and the widow Delphine and her child returned to New Orleans. So they must have been on the journey with Ramon in Havana. So in June of 1808, so now she is 20 years old, 20, I would say, she marries Jean Blanqui, a prominent banker, merchant, lawyer, and legislator. At the time of the marriage, Blanqui, I think that's how you say it, purchased a house at 409 Royal Street in New Orleans for the family, which later became known as Villa Blanc.
Yeah.
So that's how you say it, Blanc. Okay.
LeBlanc.
Delphine had four children by Blanc, named Marie, Louise, Pauline, Louise, Marie, Laurie, Louise, Marie, Louise, Janine, and Jean-Pierre Pauline Blanc. I had a brain fart. Okay. So, but her second husband died in 1816. So 6 years. So she's now 26 and has lost two husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now,
which both had tons of money.
Right. So she, you know, is a smart girl and is marrying up, right? She's high society. So in 1825, at 38 years old, she takes her third husband. Now, this man was a little bit different. He was a physician, and his name was Leonard Louis Nicholas LaLaurie, and he was much younger than her. So in 1831, she bought the property at 1140 Royal Street, which she managed in her own name with little involvement of her husband. Now, this is very rare at that time, because women didn't hold property. If you were unmarried and you had a dowry, you would have to have somebody in your family managing that money for you. You couldn't, basically women didn't have any rights. But for some reason, she was able to secure this property on her own. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure she had money from her first two husbands, and then they had that other property at 409 Royal, and then this is at 1140 Royal Street. In 1832, she had a two-story mansion built there, complete with attached slave quarters. Now, she lived there with her third husband and two of her daughters, and maintained a central position in the society circles of New Orleans. So she's rich. They got money to build their own house, which is giant. It's almost like takes up like a whole block.
It does. It takes up the whole corner and everything.
Yeah. You know, close to 1832, when she was building the house, so this is, they've been married like 7 years. So 7 year itch time comes around, right? And she petitioned the first judicial court for separation from the bed and board of her husband, in which Delphine claimed that LaLaurie had treated her in such a manner as to render their living together unsupportable. So basically, she just wanted to live separate from him.
Yeah.
So her claims also, which her son and two of her daughters were backing her up, basically. So they're confirming that, you know, this is her her third husband's treating her poorly. And so it doesn't seem like the separation was permanent, because he was present at the Royal Street house in April of 1834, the day of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about 2 years after they built the house is when the fire happens. So very interesting. So she's prominent.
Mm-hmm.
She's rich. She's been married since she was 13 and she has five kids.
Yeah. So the night of the fire, what happened was they were throwing a huge party and there was a fire in the house. And it wasn't a really big fire, but it was big enough that everybody in the party left the house and they moved it to another location. Now, I don't know the exact location that they moved it to, But basically, the party moved down the street.
And you have to understand, too, at those times, a fire was decimating.
Yeah.
Because everything's wooden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have stone buildings there, but, you know, everything's so close together.
Well,
you could, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the Lori house, if you look at it, is all like stone brick on the outside.
But everything around it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you could, the whole city could burn.
Which it did two times.
Right, right.
So the night of the fire department came in. All the guests moved to another location. The house was empty, except for the slaves. The fire department come in and found a girl chained to the stove. And she confessed to causing the fire because she wanted to bring attention to the house. And also she wanted to commit suicide because she knew that if she did anything wrong, she would be beaten severely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's step back another little bit and find out, since the husband left, he did come back and visit, you know, different times. So they were kind of like separated, but not.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple occasions, like one occasion, there was a 12-year-old girl that jumped from the roof of the building and, you know, basically jumped to her death. That girl's name was Lee. And what happened was she was brushing Delphine's hair one day. And as she's brushing it, a little bit of hair got snagged in the brush and kind of like tugged on her hair. That basically enraged Delphine. Delphine proceeded to chase her around the house with a horse whip and beating her every chance that she got. So it ended up that the girl actually made it all the way to the roof with Delphine beating her, and the girl jumped off the roof.
And the slaves that she had, now these are all servants.
Yeah.
Slaves were scared to do anything
mm-hmm.
out of step because they knew that if they did, they would be sent upstairs.
Yeah. She said that one of the slaves mentioned that if you went upstairs, you never came back down.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody that went upstairs ever came out alive.
Yeah.
There was another occasion, and if you go to New Orleans and you look at this building and you look at the windows, you'll notice that one window is bricked over. It's like, it's brick, but it's more of a smooth cement.
Mm-hmm.
The window is not there. That window is the window that another slave was getting beat by her and actually jumped out that window to his death.
Oh, man.
And instead of replacing the window, she just sealed it up. So that room that he is in, that is one of the torture rooms. Now, the girl that they found chained to the stove said to the fireman, go upstairs. And when they went upstairs, they found all the stuff.
Well, the interesting part about them going upstairs is that the door had no handle from the outside. And they had to break in the door. But Delphine getting in there?
No, I think it did have the handle on that, but it was locked shut so they couldn't get in out.
Okay. So it's famously shown in the series American Horror Story. They did a series of like the LaLaurie Mansion, where Kathy Bates played Delphine DeLaurie.
I'm gonna have to look that up and
yeah,
see that.
You have to watch it. It's very, very intense. It's very gory. I couldn't get it all the way through it because it was just too painful for me. But I don't even know where I was going with that. Oh, so you know, Joe and I had walked one of the other American Horror Stories, the Witch's Coven, the mansion they used in that. Joe and I walked in front, over through the, I don't know even where
it was
in the Garden District.
Yeah, it's in the Garden District.
To go look at that too. But
huge.
Yeah.
I've seen mansions, but I've never seen a house that big.
Yeah. It was long too.
Yeah.
Right. But so, you know, this particular mansion, the Laura Laurie house, she had turned the attic or the third floor. I think it was kind of a mix of both. It may have been like attic-y third floor. Into her personal torture chamber.
Yeah.
And tell everybody a little bit about why people were questioning why she was getting so many slaves.
Well, that's a thing too, is she had so many slaves. And she actually had, I believe, 9 of them that were taken from her. Now, there was a lawyer because, okay, so there was talk that she was treating her slaves bad, even though on the outer appearance, she was treating them really good. Mm-hmm. So there was a lawyer that actually went there, and he had a book on how to treat your slaves. Oh, and he was going to give her this book to, mm-hmm. to say, hey, this is how you treat. But when he got there, he said that he interviewed the slaves, and they all were happy to be there. Oh. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, because they knew their fate if they disobeyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, like, in that time, they're going to believe some wealthy woman over, you know, these poor souls that were, scared to death. I mean, like, one, like just a small tug of a hair could send you up to the third floor.
Well, that's it. I mean, the girl was brushing her hair, the 12-year-old girl was brushing her hair, and she just snagged a little bit and was severely beaten, and actually was beaten so bad she killed herself. And then the same thing with the girl chained to the stove. She actually chained her to the stove so that she would, cook and not leave ever. Yeah. And I'm not talking she was just chained there for a little bit. She said she was chained there for the whole time she was there.
Oh, my gosh.
And another story is if Delphine's kids tried to feed this girl, their kids would get beat just as bad.
Oh, my goodness.
Now,
what a monster.
There was a lot of stuff that went on up in that room, up in the attic or the upstairs. There was one woman. Now, I know you have some stories, too, about the other women, too. But there was one woman they call the Spider Woman because they found her with her body parts cut up and replaced in spots to make her look like a spider.
Yeah, this just wasn't people getting like whipped and beaten. She was doing graphic, horrible experiments on these people. She was doing sex changes to them. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're just going to do a warning. It might be a little bit this graphic is gonna get, here.
Yeah.
But there were so many mutilated slaves that they were, I mean, the smell was just overwhelming. There's dead bodies, dead body parts. They don't know where some of these went. You know, somebody could have taken them away in the night. They could have been in the walls. They weren't sure.
Well, they did find when after they started digging up the courtyard, they found a lot of bodies buried.
Okay.
There was a man that was actually pinned to the wall. He was hanging on the wall. There were people that were hanging from their neck on the wall and their body parts stretched.
Yeah, there were people whose limbs were removed. Odd circular pieces of skin were removed to make them look like a human caterpillar. There were some people whose faces were disfigured to make them look like gargoyles. Like you said, people pinned. And this was men, women, and children. Mm-hmm. She was doing this, I mean, just strange, strange things. She would, you know, I don't even get too dark into it, but she was, you know, making them do horrible things to each other and, you know, just.
She had her own form of lobotomy where she actually drilled into people's heads and had a spoon and went in their head and basically spooned their brain.
I mean, this is just, I mean, what makes you ever want to do, you know, like just treat another human that terribly? I mean, like, seriously. And for her to like had she been doing this all along? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think she has. I mean, she was known as America's first female serial killer and just because of all the stuff that she's done. And we're only mentioning a quarter of what she's done. I mean, she has experiments on people up in that upstairs. There was women found with the big metal collars on.
Oh, no.
With spikes in them.
Oh, God.
So that they couldn't move their head anyway for years. People with their tongues cut out. Just all kinds of stuff. And that.
She also sewed horns onto one of the people, like devil's horns.
Sewed people's eyes closed. Sewed people's mouths closed.
Yeah. I mean. You know, I don't think she was alone in this. I don't think she was the only person doing this.
I don't think she could have been.
I think that there's probably some underground secret society that was into this stuff. And maybe the parties were a ruse for people to come over and do this. Like, they maybe paid her to go up and do some of this stuff.
That's what I was thinking, too, is, you know, her huge parties that she always had. And how can you have that many big parties without something coming out?
Right. I don't know. I just, you just wonder, were the parties to cover the screaming from people being tortured?
Yeah. I didn't think of that.
You never know.
Because when you have a big party like that and you invite hundreds of people, they're going to either, somebody's going to walk into that room, even though it was locked, but you can't hide a whole upper floor torture chamber.
Right, exactly. And I don't know how she could sleep at night. How do you sleep at night? I mean, you would have to be a sociopath or psychopath or whatever it is, right? You know, and the thing is now, there, that house is reportedly, you know, been haunted for maybe 100 years or so. They have seen a man outside on the sidewalk screaming in his native tongue. So it could have been some African language. He, like somebody had gone up and he was screaming like he was in distress. Mm-hmm. And when they went to go to help this man, their hands went right through him and he disappeared. Oh. So, you know, the spirits aren't just tied inside the house. They're all, you know, around that area. There was another time that a family had moved in. They cut the house up into like a tenant apartment at one point in like the 1870s, around that time. And it was mostly immigrant dock workers and their families. But the children had, when they moved in, had immediately heard moaning and groaning and disembodied screams and the smell of burning flesh and dragging of chains, scratching noises under the floorboards. The parents would, you know, started experiencing this as well. And, you know, they just couldn't keep anybody in there. They would just move out because it was just so scary, I guess you would say. I was trying to think of a more scary word than scary. But, you know, people would just leave in the middle of the night. They just leave everything and just and run and flee because it was so just hideous. So there's also a report of a woman with long red hair glaring down when people were sleeping in that house. So they think it was the spirit of Delphine LaLaurie. And, you know, she came back to the place that she, you know, knew because she had died in Paris. So
yeah.
Tell so everybody at, well, right a little after, bit what happened.
When they had the fire, like I said, everybody, the party went to the other location. Firemen came. They found the girl. And word got out that what was going on in the house. So there's a huge mob that actually formed. And I don't know if it was partygoers or not, but there was a huge mob of like 4,000 people.
Oh my goodness.
That once the word got out what happened in that place, wanted the Delphine's necks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, while everybody was there mobbing the house, they saw a carriage coming down the road super fast. And they just assumed that it was the police coming. And as the carriage passed, nobody noticed that it was the Delphine's escaping.
Oh my God.
And they ended up going to Alabama and then off to Paris. So they escaped and went to Paris, and she lived out her life in Paris in the lap of luxury.
Yeah.
And ended up passing away.
And what's interesting, you're going to love this one.
Okay.
So they, you know, interred her in Paris, her remains in Paris. Her children dug up her bones and brought them back to New Orleans.
Oh.
And buried her. They believe in the soil in that property.
In the courtyard?
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of bodies found in the courtyard. So
yeah,
the ghost that people see in the house of a long red-haired woman is her. Yeah. It's got to be her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's other ghosts that they see in that property of slaves. People, like you said, they hear chains. They hear moaning. They hear a little girl crying.
Yeah.
They've seen a little girl in the house. I don't know if it's the same one. But the house, I mean, with all the history that had of torture and everything, is extremely haunted.
There was an old man who lived there, and I'm not sure when he lived there. It may have been in the 70s, but he rented a suite upstairs, and just days after he moved in, he ended up dying, but they found $10,000 in gold in his suitcase, and they say that he still haunts the hallways looking for his fortune.
Oh.
Yeah, interesting. But another of the owners of that house, there was many owners over the decades. They would lose their health. They lost their sanity. They lost their wealth. So, you know, now they say this building is cursed, right?
Yeah.
And even up to Nicolas Cage,
when he owned it. I was going to say that, yeah.
Same curse. He went bankrupt. He lost it right after Hurricane Katrina. And they say nobody can really stay in there. So I'm really curious about this Texas energy trader. I gotta look this guy up.
Look him up.
He needs to be my best friend, right? And see what kind of interesting things happened there. I hope he restored it to the way it was instead of keeping it in like apartments.
That's it. You don't know what the inside of this place looks like, because when we walked past it, I didn't even think to look and see if is the bottom floor stores or is it a locked up place. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I don't think it's stores. I think this is a residence. Can you imagine? Oh, we should have, and why didn't we? But you know, we were so busy. Just go there in the middle of the night and just stand outside.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody in the city.
That's what I was thinking too. And I know you mentioned about taking like a 2 a.m. walk to see what the place looks like.
Yeah.
Why didn't we do that?
Because we were tired from walking all day.
It's possible.
I think Joe and I put about 20,000 steps on.
But that's what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
In New Orleans, that's what you do. You walk.
Especially, you know, and we're not drinkers. So, you know, we're not like and out Bourbon Street, you know, we're looking at the architecture and the gardens. And
I don't do Bourbon Street. No,
you guys don't.
I was there the last time we went. I went on Bourbon Street and it was
a nightmare.
It was 10,000 people on Bourbon Street.
It's crazy.
And it was, to me, it was just not my vibe. So we went over to Frenchman Street, which is more like the adult street.
Yeah.
You know, you got real New Orleans jazz playing.
Mm-hmm. People sitting around, like, drinking wine and,
you
know, enjoying the music, not just trying to get
Bourbon Street
on hurricanes.
Yeah, Bourbon Street, the music you hear on Bourbon, and you can go on live. They got live cams that you can actually go on. You can hear, it's all hip-hop and rap, and it's like, that's not New Orleans.
Well, it is for those young people, right?
Like, the youngins.
The youngins, because now I'm old. I got my ARP card. I do. I got one. So I can get a discount.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really, like, pains me because, like, I'm very sensitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for people to be, like, horribly abused and tortured.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
I mean, even children. It's terrible. And I heard the story that things like this still go on. There are very, very wealthy people in high places, diplomats,
mm-hmm.
English aristocrats that for fun will torture and mutilate people and children.
Oh, really?
I'm not exaggerating. This stuff happens and we need to get it to stop.
Yeah.
Ah!
But next time we go to New Orleans, you're all invited.
Yes.
But we are going to do an investigation. We are going to get one. We're getting to know some people, and we got to get into some of these old locations, do a proper investigation.
Yeah, and if you guys go back, when we were there before, we went on a ghost tour with Jonathan Weiss.
Yeah.
Who I tried to get a hold of while we were down there, and he didn't answer. But anyways, you know, listen to the show that we did and we interviewed him. He's such a wealth of knowledge of New Orleans and what really happened back in the beginnings and the early days. It's bad enough that you're a slave.
Mm-hmm.
You have no rights. You're treated horribly. There's no medicine. I mean, if you got yellow fever or one of the other communicable diseases, they probably just, like, let you die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, so, but the haunting, the just the feeling of like, I don't know. Do you get that feeling down there that everything is just like haunted?
It is. It's a very haunted city.
And, you know, we went on, Joe and I went on this ghost tour, right? Because we love history and we love, you know, storytelling. And it was really, really bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad. This girl who's the guide, normally all the guys are guides down there, not guys, guides, are very animated. They're very knowledgeable about the city. It's very engaging and they have great ghost stories to tell and stuff. But the one we had was not good. It wasn't good, but she did take us to a one of the places that where they would bring the slaves in to. What was that? Was it like a holding cell?
Yeah,
or
it was a holding cell
trading
before they got sold.
Post.
Mm-hmm.
It was sad. It felt like really creepy, and you know, it just I don't know.
And there was a lot of them there. There's, you know, I mean, there was a lot more. We're right in on Jackson Square in front of the cathedral, and catty corner to the restaurant we were at where they have the seance room, but that square is where they would do some of the slave trading, and also they did a lot of executions in that.
Oh,
also,
yeah,
so
lots of pirates.
The whole area is just super haunted. The French Quarter is so haunted.
Oh my gosh, I mean, it was so cool though, because I liked the fact that there wasn't a lot of people around,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, just because you get to see the city. I don't know. That fog rolling into the city, that was creepy.
Yeah.
And
we know you never go into the fog.
Oh, no, it's so scary. But guys, get down to New Orleans if you can. You know, it was really, really fun. Be careful, though. There are some scam artists that ask you where you got your shoes.
Yeah, just tell them to shut the hell up and
tell them New Orleans, and they'll know to leave you alone. It's a scam.
It's a scam.
But anyways.
And there's also a lot of stories about, like, they had fires. They had plagues.
Mm-hmm.
One of the fire stories is there was an orphanage where all the children died, and they're still there. Their spirits still roam around that orphanage. But lots of haunted stories, and maybe we'll bring you some more.
For sure. And we'll be back.
Check out my new book that'll be out about New Orleans in 10 years when I write it.
Come on, Joe. Get to writing. There's so many good stories. But no, guys, you know, love to just bring you some of our adventures and some of the history, and definitely check it out. And if you guys go to New Orleans and get any ghost evidence, you know, share it with us. Put us on our page. We want to see your ghost pics. Show us your spirits.
All right. Well, as we always say, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please get up there on our website and buy some t-shirts.
Yes, merchandise. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Let's leave with some Devil White Devil. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Dead in Five.
Bye, Joe.
Bye-bye. You lose your mind and you'll grind as you're creating.